we will delve in today, the more intense unpacking, is the price, setting the cost against the profits of the world's least expensive car, the Tata Nano. Our journeys will be both inside and beyond the world of a car and its design and engineering. As the historian and champion of 20th century modernism, Siegfried Gideon, once wrote, the spirit of the modern age is best experienced and most intensely experienced behind the wheel of a car. So our panelist and keynote speaker today will explore whether Siegfried Gideon's contention is still true, and more importantly, is it also optimal for us in the 21st century? Is putting more people behind the wheel of a car still the touchstone of progress for us? In our first panel, there will be an attempt to unpack the Nano in terms of its design and engineering, and that will be chaired by my architecture colleague, as I said, Professor Alex Meergold. His speakers will bring together their expertise to bear on the Nano's design and engineering, its popularity, and whether or not it is sustainable proposition. Min Nima Kudva has crafted a very diverse panel to rethink the position of the Nano within landscapes of the mobile and of movement. My panel will focus on other landscapes, that is, those design and cultural spaces that are created within the museum and on the building side. And finally, writer of Suketu Mehta, in his keynote address and then in conversation with Professor Durga Ghosh from the History Department, will intertwine the notion of movement with storytelling in the city. But to jumpstart everything today on the Nano, I thought it would be very apt to screen some film clips. Given that film has been the medium of movement since its origins in the late 19th century. So you need to think of these film clips as trailers or teasers for the coming attractions of this second day of the Nano Symposium.
The first film clip that I want to show you is, I hope, to introduce Alex's session. And it's a film from 2010 that recounts a middle-class Delhi family's journey from a two-wheeler, a motor scooter, to the promise of a four-wheeler, their first car. And the film is called Two Twos Are Four.
Stylish, smart, safe, value for money, and Indians. अरे बैठ के देखिए सर, पूरे 10 साल यंगर लगेंगे आप, 50 के लगेंगे बिल्कुल.
51 का हूँ.
Really सर? लगते तो 41 के आप.
अच्छा, मुझे तो वो वाली चाहिए भाई.
वो वाली? The complete family का सर. Spacious, luxurious, hassle-free, value for money, and Indians. On road rupees 3,38,000 only. Sir. क्या हुआ सर? Any problem?
नहीं, नो प्रॉब्लम. आपके पास ऐसी वाली नानो नहीं है? नानो
अच्छी गाड़ी, बगल में शोरूम है, लाइन में जाके लग जाइए, डेढ़ दो साल में नंबर आ ही जाएगा.
डेढ़ दो साल में? नहीं यार, मुझे तो गाड़ी 15-1 दिन में चाहिए. अच्छा, काम कीजिए, वो मारुति 800 नहीं है आपके पास?
800 सर,
800.
चलिए सर. आज भी जब 800 चलती है तो लोग जलते हैं सर, पर सैडली वो हिस्ट्री हो जाएगी सर. अगर 800 के प्राइस में मैं आपको ये ऑल्टो दिलवा दूं तो?
800 के प्राइस में ऑल्टो दिला दोगे?
रोहन मोटर्स की तरफ से स्पेशल स्कीम है सर, डीलर्स डिस्काउंट, फ्री इंश्योरेंस, 5,000 की एक्सेसरीज ओनली फॉर यू सर, लेकिन 31 तारीख तक.
31 तक? वो तो 5 दिन रह गए.
एग्जैक्टली, इसीलिए कह रहा हूँ सर, देर मत कीजिए, ड्राइव कीजिए, आप खुद ही कहेंगे ऑल्टो.
ड्राइव तो मैं नहीं, पायल करेगी.
पायल सर?
पायल मेरी बेटी.
आपकी बेटी? तो फैमिली के साथ टेस्ट ड्राइव करना चाहते हैं सर. नो इशू सर, मैं गाड़ी लेके घर आ जाता हूँ.
आप गाड़ी घर लेके आएंगे?
ऑफ कोर्स सर. आप अंदर एड्रेस लिखवा दीजिए, पायल आ जाए, फिर सब फैमिली ड्राइव पे चलते हैं.
ओ सर, मेनी थैंक्स फॉर योर असिस्टेंस. हां
श्योर सर,
थैंक यू.
श्योर सर.
ऑल्टो? नो वे.
ऑल्टो फालतू कार नहीं है, मारुति 800 से मोर बेटर है.
मोर बेटर तो चाहिए नहीं ना पापा, बेस्ट चाहिए.
I'll just say, I hope this clip, again, begins to foreground some of the issues that we will begin to unpack. First of all, I find it fascinating that by 2010, the Nano had already entered into the slipstream of Indian popular culture films. Nevertheless, I have to say, this film is already dated, as the character that you see, this first-time car owner, could now buy a Nano without any delay and with bank financing. But the Alto, the car that he ultimately buys, is still the Nano's chief rival, and its sales are up 28%, while the Nano still seems to be struggling. All right, so for Nima's session, which I hope she will approve of, a 2007 film set at a Mumbai traffic intersection, or as we will see, a space where there is no movement. Movement has been arrested and come to a stop. This is a clip from the film Traffic Signal.
Lelo saab, sunscreen lelo, saab lelo.
भाई साहब
कह रहे क्या हुआ
आपका टायर पंचर है
अरे मेरा मोबाइल अरे मेरा मोबाइल अरे अरे मेरा मोबाइल चोरी करके भाग रहा है अरे मेरा मोबाइल लेके भाग रहा है अरे कोई पकड़े उसको मेरा मोबाइल लेके भाग रहा है
अरे भाई साहब क्या हुआ
अरे मेरा मोबाइल चोरी करके भाग रहा है
हां देखते हैं कुछ करते हैं पहले गाड़ी निकालो अभी जाओ
ऐसे झोलझाल तो ट्रैफिक सिग्नल पे होते चले अभी इतने साल हो गए ले मेरे को इधर कि ऐसा लगता है कि शहर में रहने वाले हर एक को मैंने कभी ना कभी इधर से गुजरते हुए जरूर देखा है अब कोई आदमी जिंदगी में खाली एक ही टाइम दिखता है तो कोई रोज अब उनके सिग्नल पे रुकने वाली ये सब गाड़ियां है ना अपने मॉडल और कीमत की ऊंच नीच को एक तरफ रख कंधे से कंधा मिला के ऐसे खड़ी रहती है ना मानो कि अपने सिग्नल को इज्जत दे रहे लियो सिग्नल पे रुकने वाले हर एक आदमी के भेजे में एक ही टेंशन रहता है कि कब ये सिग्नल अपना रंग बदले और कब वो इधर से निकल जाए इधर बिताए 10 से 15 सेकंड भी साले को घंटे के माफिक लगते लेकिन गाड़ी में बैठे आदमी के भेजे में एक बात उतरती नहीं है कि इतने टाइम के लिए वो एक कस्टमर है सिग्नल पे पलने वाली अपुन की इंडस्ट्री का एक कस्टमर अपने धंधे में बहुत जन काम करते और हर काम करने वाले को हफ्ता देना पड़ता है ये हफ्ता वो सिग्नल के मैनेजर के पास जमा रहता और हर सिग्नल का अपना अपना मैनेजर रहता है और केलकर मार्ग के सिग्नल का मैनेजर हूँ मैं नाम सिलसिला मैंने इधर वो सब सीखेला है जो किसी भी स्कूल या कॉलेज में सिखाया नहीं जाता
Some of the Hindi speakers can correct me, but basically this is an intersection about the spaces where movement is arrested and it comes to a halt. And yet it's created by the car and its drivers. And what the signal manager says is these people don't understand. When they stopped here, they are our customers for several minutes. And so the hawkers, the thieves, and the beggars have an opportunity to pursue a livelihood. And again, they create from this immobile situation a slim possibility of their having the opportunity to rise and be mobile. So I'm sorry that the subtitles weren't there. So I hope that's accurate from our speakers. So finally, the next clip is for my session on the Nano and different kinds of design practices, and also Suketu Mehta's keynote address. It's a clip from a Tata ad for the Nano that's currently airing on Indian television. This is the design and the story that Tata Motors has given us for the Nano, and it's called Nano, the Key to Your Happiness.
शहरी दर हर देरी हर पी चौखा टाटा नैनो, आपकी खुशियों की चाबी.
So at that point, I'll end things and I'll ask Professor Alex Mirigold to come forward and to introduce his session. Thank you.
Our first session deals with the kind of three basic thrusts of this project that we kind of identified early on, and I think we sort of more or less remain true to it. So the first one is going to be about the kind of the object itself, the design of it, and how it is actually possible to make a car that, you know, is not particularly expensive or affordable, and various really actually kind of imaginary and I mean imaginative rather, and really kind of truly exciting things that the engineers who are working on this thing had to do to accomplish this task. And then we'll talk about the kind of social implications of this thing and the idea that the car can also kind of be translated into a social construct. And finally, which particularly in the university kind of brings up a large debate, I think, we'll talk about the idea of car and sustainability and the idea that the car essentially, to a certain degree, is not the best thing for the environment. So these are the kind of three fairly kind of conflicting sessions, but these are the very kind of subjects that we had to contend with during the making of our exhibit, and I think that's why, to a large extent, we're all here. So with that in mind, I'd like to introduce our first speaker today, and his name is Abhay Deshpande, and he is head of vehicle integrations at, in particular, the Nano Project Tata Motors. I must also say that I think Abhay has been a really gracious host to our design exhibit team in India, and they really opened up all of their archives and were really kind of generous in sharing just about anything. At some point, they even offered to remake some of the prototypes that were lost for us so that we can exhibit them. I said, well, no, let's not change the course of history here, but they were incredibly generous. So Abhay, who's a native of Mumbai, and graduated with a degree in mechanical engineering from Mumbai University, is basically a specialist in automotive engineering, and in particular in research and development of things. But he's also a scholar. He presented sort of several papers on, you know, including on engine combustion modeling, and he's also a businessman because he holds an MBA. So he's kind of a multifaceted fellow, and again, like I said, he was a really gracious host to us, and he will help us unravel the process of the making of the Nano. So from the very man himself, who was very much deeply involved in this whole thing. So I'd like you all to welcome Abhay here, and we'll give him the floor.
I would like to start with the statement of Mr. Tata yesterday. He explained the vision of Nano. Surely it was not a doodle. So I will take you through the journey of Nano from dream to reality. There is a film at the end, so I would like to just keep the volume on. Thank you. So let's see how the Nano was made. Before going through actual process of Nano, I would like to take you to the Indian automotive industry. This is the world map with the dark shade corresponds to very high density of the automotive cars per 1,000 inhabitants. For example, the USA, Portugal, and Australia have more than 700 cars per 1,000. You will find there are a lot of faint green areas, especially the India, where the density of the cars is not much. It is around 10 to 12 cars per 1,000 inhabitants. And here are some of the transportation means in India. Most of them are going on the two-wheeler. It's very common that there are three or four people in the two-wheeler. You will find also in the rain, there is one child in the front, one baby in the hand of the mother, with the umbrella on, they are going through. This is a very common scene. There are different kind of transport available. Basically, there is a need for transportation from going one point to another point in India. This has given rise to the vision of Mr. Tata. I remember the way back in 2003, maybe in say July or August, Mr. Tata called a team of engineers to his office in Bombay and conceived this idea. He said, I observed the families riding on the two-wheeler, the father driving the scooter, his young kid standing in front of him and his wife seated behind holding the little baby. It led me to wonder whether one could conceive of a safe, affordable, all-weather form transport. This was the vision of Tata. He mentioned that we need to have a people's car, which should be affordable, but yet be to meet all the safety and environmental standard. At the same time, it should be fuel efficient and very low on the emission too. Let's try to understand his mission with this triangle. The top of the triangle is the customer, and the bottom of the triangle is the market, the people who want to travel. Most of the automakers make the cars for the people who can afford it. That is the top of the triangle. But the vision of Mr. Tata is to make the car affordable to the people. This is what I think the bottom of the pyramid, he tried to look at the bottom of the pyramid rather than the top of the pyramid. So how the product could be positioned, a team went through the whole process of understanding the market. There had been a lot of two-wheelers at different price ranges, less than 1 lakh rupees. And there was an entry-level car at maybe 2 lakh or more than 2 lakh price. And the Nano tries to fit in the space between the two-wheeler and the entry-level car, but it's very near to the two-wheeler. A person owning a two-wheeler can easily afford to buy a car. So we decided to have a target in terms of 5 major achievements. One, the car should be affordable. It should be low initial cost with very high fuel efficiency so that the running cost is lower. It should be safe. It should be comfortable and the 4 passengers can sit comfortably in it, and at the same time it should be convenient in the parking and the crowded places. At the same time, it should be environment friendly and it should meet all the regulations of India. With this target, the team started. There had been meanwhile a lot of criticism from different people, and most of the people said Tata's rupees 1 lakh car was not feasible. The team started with the idea of making a car for 1 lakh. It was very difficult. There was no benchmark available. There was no market survey available. There was no technology map available. We tried to search for different cars available, small car available in the world. There is a Smart, there is a K cars in Japan, but there no car was near to the price of 1 lakh. So there were a lot of concepts were discussed, whether the car should have a plastic body, whether it should be a sheet metal body, whether the car should have a door or it should not have a door, whether it should be a front wheel or whether it should be rear wheel drive. And all these concepts were discussed one by one, and it was decided to have a rear engine vehicle. The early design studies, you will find, it's just like a three-wheeler. At that time, the three-wheeler was available at the price of 80,000 rupees. So if you add one more wheel to the three-wheeler, it will be 1 lakh rupees. So the car will be 1 lakh. So the early concept was adding a wheel to the three-wheeler. And then later on, there are a lot of concepts were made in terms of design. And we shortlisted a concept which looks quite more elegant. And this was the final concept selected for Nano. To start with, just to understand what the 1 lakh rupee car will be, we tried to bring the two scooters. I mean, the cost of the two scooters will be 1 lakh and joined together. And this particular prototype is still available in the museum. You can have a look at it. That was the first mule actually was made. Later on, after a lot of study of different parts, The engine will be in the rear, the fuel tank will be in the below the co-driver seat, battery in the front. We tried to make a concept finalization model that whether how it will work out. You will find that there is no door. Initially, there was no door was envisaged. Later on, the third mule we made, we also added a kind of a rod and a kind of a curtain. So there were no doors. But then later on, the final design was made with the door. This was again in 2005. There was a lot of tile refinement in terms of headlamp, and the air scoop was done that time. When we moved to 2006, there was a lot of further refinement into the car. The car was looking quite trendy. During the same time, there had been a major change in terms of the overall length of the car. We tried to keep the car in the within the length of 3 meter, but we could not manage few passenger area. We had some problem in terms of the reaching of the pedal. So we had to increase the wheelbase, and we had to increase the length of the car by 100 millimeters. So finally it became 3.1 meter, and accordingly the style was refined. This is final refined CAD in terms of adding, say, fog lamps and the grille to the bumper. And this is the final design intended CAD rendering. I would like to mention here, most of this design work was done virtually, I mean in CAD rather than actually with the help of styling model. So the final design of Nano, which was launched in 2008. I think we'll move to the styling of interior, the design of interior. So these are the few initial concept of interior in terms of the seat and the dashboard. Even one point of time, it was discussed that we should have a kind of a bench seat without the foam for the front passengers. And you will see the dashboard, which is looking very simple. These are the few more rendering, and we tried to finalize whether the instrument cluster should go behind the steering wheel or it should go at the center. Finally, we decided to take it on the center. These are the initial mock-ups made with the initial concept of dashboard and the steering wheel. Further refinement was done in the interior design in the CAD. This is one of the theme which gives the overall interior, the dashboard, the seat, as well as the door pad. This is the second theme which was again made in CAD to understand, I mean, how it looks like, but this was more costlier than the earlier one, and then we have gone ahead with the theme of the first theme. And then the initial mock-up was made with the first theme selected. Here are few examples of the door pad, how different versions will have different door pads. So for example, the base version, we had no pocket, nothing, it is fairly simple. Then the middle version will have a two-tone, double color, and the high version will have a pocket as well as will have a hand rest, etc. Similarly, there was steering wheel for the base version and for high version, it's a two-spoke and the three-spoke. Similarly, console and the seat. So there was a differentiation between the base and the high versions. So these are the three versions presently the Nano is available with: the base version, the mid version, and the high version. I think the base version, we have already unpacked the red color car in the exhibition, and the yellow car is the high version car, which was kept yesterday in the museum. This is a overall very busy slide. This tries to touch upon the various product development phases, starting from initial styling, going down to the initial mule. Then a lot of work was done on the CAD. The whole package was done in the CAD. Then this CAD package was sent for the analysis. There was a virtual analysis in terms of the endurance, in terms of the crash, in terms of NVH, in terms of pooling. So there were a lot of analysis were done in the virtually. And later the prototypes were made, almost 100 prototypes were made and tested before the car was launched in 2008. And there was always a target to to develop a most affordable car, but it should not compromise on quality, safety, and environment, right from beginning until the end. And Mr. Tata always had said that I do not want any compromise for a car. So there is no feature reduction, no content reduction in the car. It should be a complete car. To understand the process, I mean, these are the different phases of the development cycle. But to understand what has really gone inside, I mean, what is the innovation process, I would like to take the example of this innovation model. See, there was a challenge and the objective that we need to meet a most affordable car. And what has been made is known to everybody. That is the product innovation. It is very well seen and experienced by the customers. That is why I made purposefully this area of the triangle a little bright. But how it has been done? What are the changes in terms of the organization? And what are the changes in terms of the organization processes? What they have been done that is not known to anybody. So I thought I will just touch upon what are the changes. So we'll start with the changes in the organization, then the process, and then we'll come to the product innovation. So what change was made in the organization? There were these five interventions were done in the organization so as to make this Nano possible. First one is the formation of young and cross-functional team, which are the people which are young, open-minded, they are the risk takers. And this team of young officers were directly reporting to the heads of the business, and they were ensured the empowerment as well as the mentoring. There had been a lot of interaction with Mr. Tata as well as Mr. Ravi Kant. Mr. Tata used to come every 2 or 3 months. He drove right from the first mule. He drove all the cars in all the stages. He personally drove the car. And he used to say that consider me as a member of your team and not as a senior management and the chairman. So there was a lot of interaction with the Mr. Tata as well as Mr. Ravi Kant. So that helped to ensure the organization focus as well as the fast decision making. It also provided a lot of recognition to the young team, those who are working, and thereby it promoted the environment of creativity and innovation. The next point is very important. The creation of environment where there is no fear for failure. This was specific task was taken by the team. What used to happen for all the other projects, for example, when the person does the engineering, he will be definitely sure enough that at the first stage of his design and his engineering, he will meet the goal. So he used to make his design more rich in terms of higher factor of safety, higher weight, higher cost, and he would like that his design should never fail. Here we try to change this rule. We said we do not want to come from top to bottom. We want to go from bottom to top. So let the design fail. We will make the improvement, then we'll come up. Again it fails, again we'll make the improvement. So at least it will help to optimize the product. So this was the major change was done in terms of philosophy of design and engineering. At the same time, a lot of stretched targets were also taken by the team. This is the example of cross-function team. On the right-hand side, there are research and development departments, and the left-hand side there is a plant team, and this was as a total cross-functional team. More important is the people who are working on the vendor development, manufacturing, they participated right beginning in the program as a part of the project. Here I would like to explain what was the process, what was the change in the process, what is the innovation process. I would like to take the help of this triangle. This is very interesting. The three apex of the triangle are the three requirements we have to meet for any product. One is the regulation requirement. This is a must we have to meet. There was a cost target. This was very special for this project. The cost has to be 1 lakh, so there was a cost target. And the car has to be sold to the people. It has to have a market. So there is a customer and product requirement. This is also certainly important. So these are the two important things. One is the minimum critical rule. During the process, we decided that there should be a minimum critical rule in the sense we should adhere to these 5 or 6 rules. One is adherence to the customer safety and the regulatory requirement. Secondly, invent rather than adapt. The adaption is very easy, I mean, but the inventing is something is very difficult. So we always said that while doing the engineering, let us try to invent rather than adapt. We also encourage a lot of out-of-box thinking and reduction of part count and integrating two or more functions into the one. And as I said, failures are accepted. At the same time, lot of this process worked on a lot of core values in terms of challenging the assumption, taking the stretch targets, encouraging each other in the team, celebrating the achievement, appreciating the failures. This was basically, the design was built with a lot of collaborative efforts. I would like to explain how this process works. If you design a particular component or you engineer a particular component or the system, first you try to see that whether the regulation is met. You make your design to meet the regulation. Then you check whether the cost is meeting. If it is not meeting, redesign the component. Then you check whether your customer and product requirements are meeting. If it is meeting, go to the regulatory, otherwise again change. So this iterative process was continued until all the three targets of regulation, customer product requirement, and the cost are met. So there had been a lot of design iterations in terms of different components and different systems. One of the examples I would like to give is the fuel pump, the fuel module, which is normally in the tank and which supplies the fuel to the engine. When we started the project, so we went to the supplier, he gave his proposal, which was very, very expensive. So it was a low meeting regulation and the performance, it was very expensive. We asked supplier to go back and bring the better design which will suit the product target, cost target. Then he came over another design which is 5 or 10% lower than this in terms of cost, but still it was not meeting nowhere near the target. So when the supplier failed to, get the design, the team along with the supplier sat together. They tried to understand what are the parts going into the module. So there is a fuel pump, there is a pressure regulator, there is a rollover valve, there is a non-return valve, and then there is a flange. So these are the 5 component, basic component you make the fuel module. So each component was tried to see whether we are just meeting the customer requirement or not. Yeah. So during this phase, there was a lot of benchmarking, and then the design was given to the supplier. Along with the supplier, we made the design. Then this design was not meeting the performance. But that was not meeting the performance only for one part, that is a pressure regulator. For all other remaining 4 parts, it did meet the performance. So the pressure regulator was changed, and then we got the final module here, which is meeting regulation, performance, and cost. Today, this fuel pump is in the car. We have no problem in the field. The cost of this fuel module is half of the cost of the fuel module which was envisaged here, and which is used by other competitors, as well as which is used also by Tata Motors in other car designs like Indica. So this is costing 800 rupees against 1500 to 600 rupees for this fuel module. So this was the process. Similarly, there were a lot of iterations for the engine. There were 3 iterations for engine. There were almost 11 iterations for the floor. So coming back to the product innovation. So I tried to capture here 4 important innovations. One is, as I said, integration of different functions is key towards reduction of number of parts and achieving the cost. You will find there is in the engine, there is a water pump and oil pump. The water pump and oil pump are in the same casting. We have only one casting. On the one side of the casting is the water pump, and another side of the casting is the oil pump. So we, instead of 2 different parts, we try to have one part, and we try to reduce the parts. Then there is a single wiper, which is taking care of all regulation as well as functionality of the driver. The wheel is mounted with the 3 bolts instead of 4 bolts. With this car, we tested it, everything, and we found it okay. The second one is the lowest pollution level. We could achieve the emission level 1 stage above the target. That time there was a Euro 3 requirement in India. We could get the Euro 4. We were meeting Euro 4 when we launched the car. Then the next one is the fuel efficiency. and the CO2. It is the lowest CO2 in India during that time. The nearest competitor was far away, around 120 grams per kilometer. And we got for nano 101 gram. And later on, last 2 years, we made the changes. So we are gone below 95. Today, the car is going to be get launched in April. We have a CO2 figure of less than 95. Also, interesting was this packaging. We had a entry-level car, which was having a length of 3.3 meter, and Nano is 3.1 meter. So we have 8% lower in terms of the footprint than the entry-level car. But the interior space was 20% higher than the competitor. And the number of parts used were 65% lower than what they use. These are the few features. We call it as a first timer, first time we put into the passenger cars, like fuel filling from the front. So it will not affect the design. You have to open the bonnet and fill the fuel. Single wiper, then the, as we discussed, three bolt mounting. Then the centrally mounted exhaust, the exhaust system mounted here. I think the designer thought that we'll have a much better style when we have an exhaust system here. So we changed the bumper and then we could get the exhaust here. It's also very interesting, the engine is two cylinder and with the single balancer shaft. This is the first time in the passenger car, and this is the lowest cost engine, and it meets all the performance, and it's has a no problem. I mean, it's going on very well. I'm in the market. Yeah. Also, very interesting concept was the modular powertrain. There is a hydroform cradle, which in-houses the engine, the transmission, the exhaust system, the cooling system, the suspension, and everything is mounted on this cradle. And this cradle is attached to the body with the help of 5 bolts. You remove the bumper, you remove the 5 bolts, and the whole engine along with the suspension, the tires, you can just take it out. So it gives a very ease of serviceability. I would like to just touch upon a lot of challenges we had while implementing this, manufacturing it. Initially, we started in Calcutta. That time, we made a complete plant for 350,000 vehicles. The total plant was ready. We did also a lot of trials with Nano there, but there had been a lot of issues, political issues, and we had to shift this plant completely from Calcutta, Singur, to Ahmedabad, right from the east of India to the west of India. There were almost 3,800 trucks were required to take these parts, complete factory from here to Ahmedabad. So in between, we had a fallback arrangement, and in the north of India, there was a small plant in Uttarakhand with a small capacity. We began Nano producing there, and now for last 6 months, this plant is in operational, and we have a lot of ramp up and a lot of production is possible in the new plant. In short, I wanted to say that in two and a half years, almost three plants are built for making the Nano. That was a really lot of patience shown by the team who executed this project. Here are some applauses from the various people, from Nissan, BMW, CEO of Ferrari. And some of the captions from the leading newspaper and magazines. I think you might have gone through it. So what was the impact of Nano overall? I just thought I'll mention it here. A young executive in Delhi, he said, "Thank God I can own a car." There are so many people, they are saying today that, "Oh, I can own a Nano, the car." There are a lot of people who aspire to have a car, but still they could not buy because of the cost, so now they can buy the car. Also, one of the magazine, Auto Analysis, said the Nano is the 21st century equivalent to Model T. What is the impact on the automotive industry as a whole? There are a lot of companies like General Motors, Toyota, Hyundai. Later on, recently they announced that they will make a small car. And finally, when the car was unveiled, at the unveiling in the press conference, one of the journalists asked, after looking at the car, he never thought the car will be of 1 lakh. So he asked, so finally, what is the price of the car? So Mr. Tata answered, a promise is promise. The car is at 1 lakh. And this is the very strong statement made by Mr. Tata during that time. And the car today is available at 1 lakh, is the base version car. And it can be afforded by the lot of aspirant people. What is the way ahead? Way ahead is we need to be more global. I mean, having a single market is not a good proposition. It has to be more global. Initially, the car will go to the markets in ASEAN countries like Thailand, Indonesia, and other places. We are trying to develop a car for Europa also. This is a recently in Geneva Motor Show, the car was unveiled, which is basically the philosophy of Nano. And we are targeting the trendy design and the innovation in terms of parking the car and the innovative connectivity concept. I would quickly like to take you through this video.
I would like to invite Phil Patton, who is an automotive critic for the New York Times, as well as a whole bunch of other things. In particular, so he's teaching at the School of Visual Arts. Thank you. I mean, there's so many things in here. So he's teaching School of Visual Arts. He wrote a whole number of books that it will be almost too difficult to describe here. But one in particular is about the Volkswagen bug. So talking about people's cars, he knows a thing or two about them. He's a curator and journalist, and I think overall a really exciting person to have here in this particular situation because, he brings this kind of a sort of social perspective, journalist perspective on a very technological issue that Abhay has presented so far. So I'd like you to welcome Phil Patton here. Thank you.
I came with some reluctance about my topic until... yesterday hearing Professor Appadurai talk about the social life of things and laying out in his keynote the notion of objects of design functioning as characters and personalities in our lives, which is certainly leads into my notion that cars can become characters. Chris Bangle at BMW, the great designer, said that that cars today are avatars, and the story of people's cars over the years certainly shows that. The whole question of whether an object, a piece of technology, has a feeling and spirit to it, I think, was answered yesterday also by Mr. Tata, who said that every car had an unconscious attraction to its buyer, necessarily, and that was understood at the beginning of his thinking about the Nano, as with other products. So let us define very roughly a people's car, and I'm going to run through some of the history quite rapidly. Some of you will be very familiar with it. Others perhaps will not. A people's car, going back to the Model T, is a low-cost, basic, universal car aimed at bringing automobility quickly to whole countries. And that is to say, it takes the idea that automobility for the masses is a desirable end. As Henry Ford believed, getting the working man out of the city with his family on a weekend was a good thing. And it takes that as a particular value to begin with. That's a given. It works on following traits. Almost always in the cases, whether it's the Model T, the Citroën Deux-Chevaux, the Fiat 500 in two iterations, the Mini, the various people's cars, even in socialist countries, have behind them strong personalities involved. There's also often a moment of strong inspiration. There is, in consequence of that, a radical rethinking of engineering and design. We certainly have heard that in the case of the Tata Nano. Whether it is necessarily frugal, whether frugal was used at the time of these earlier cars. There is a strong emphasis on price. Price is critical. Before the car has personality, even name, price is what gets talked about. Whether it is the 50,000 lira that was promised in 1934 for the Fiat 500, about the cost of about the annual income of a average working man at the time, or the 1,000 marks that Hitler and Ferdinand Porsche promised for the Volkswagen. So therefore, the relation of design and technology has to do with price. And there could be someone drawing up neat curves, I would like to see them, adoption curves that would take the annual income of a population, the average income, and the cost of a vehicle, and plot them and see how they fell out with these various people's cars over time. I don't do that kind of thing, fortunately. Leave that to the cleometricians. But that would be a revealing thing to see. So that is the factor that's critical. The Model T, the price came down, was a significant thing about that. We know the story, probably the biggest business story of the past century, using the American system of interchangeable parts, the assembly line, radically frugal engineering. Henry Ford brought the cost of an automobile down to what the American farmer could afford, and put America on wheels using factory methods. Henry Ford hated farming. He moved to the city and he wanted to do everything he could, and yet, ironically, he created a machine to take people back to the country. The consequences of this universal car, one car for every purpose, were that whereas the average person had never traveled more than 25 miles away from town, he began to do so. And there were tremendous social consequences. Take one. When you had a horse, you plowed with the horse went in the barn at night. When you had a car, the horse could plow, and you could go at night in your Model T to the movies. Whole new avenues opened up. Consumer products and other things became suddenly excited, as you could see in town. So the Ford Model T example, the price declined with time. It evolved much more than you will hear. It was a constant basic car that changed over time, but still remained lean. Parts were reduced over time, and there was a whole growth industry that grew up around it. We'll talk a little bit more about that. We talk about personalization. The Volkswagen, 1938, comes in the course of Ferdinand Porsche, the greatest automobile engineer of his time, already famous, made the famous Faustian pact with the most evil dictator of the century to build the car he had been dreaming of for many years, a people's car, this example for NSU in 1932. But he built it for Adolf Hitler, targeted with a ridiculous price. Of course, mass production did not begin until after World War II, when it succeeded primarily as an export model, not for the people of Germany, but to make the people of Germany wealthy again after the war. Similar, the Fiat 500, the so-called Topolino or Mouse of 1936, grew out of the Agnelli family, their determined vision for a people's car for the Italian people, the Agnelli's owning Fiat, and with the support of Mussolini. But great designers, engineers brought to radically rethink the vehicle. Dante Giacosa, an engineer turned stylist, not only did the original Fiat 500, but the 1957 version of the 500, which probably did more realistically to put Italians on wheels, radically changing the car by moving the engine around, putting the radiator in back, and making a absolutely tiny car practical. And he didn't hit the 50,000 lira target, but he did get 8,000, which was astonishing. So radical rethinking required to meet or come close to an unrealistic price, and kind of a lovable thing too. As I say, Giacosa, in an unprecedented fashion, would design 20 years later another people's car, having already done the 600 and the Multipla bus. So one of the great figures, an inspiration for both engineers and a stylist to do both things, with the so-called double bubble line that makes this small car so attractive. You can see the sort of waist that he's given it, and the moving of the engine around. Another example, each people's car characterized has something of the people that create it. So they're not all the same. They do in each way, in many cases, reflect the countries of origin. The Citroën du Chauveau, whose name echoes two horses and has a very rural quality to it. Citroën was one of the leading technical companies in Europe, in the European automobile industry, in the early 30s. They had developed the Traction d'Avant, the first successful front-wheel drive car, very advanced, very popular, but it had nearly bankrupted them. And whereas before you could have seen Citroën advertising all over Paris, I mean, this is what Picasso and Hemingway were looking at when they wandered around Paris in the 20s. The money they spent on this advanced car for the high end of the market had bankrupted them essentially by 1936, and they were taken over by Michelin, the tire company. And one of the executives, Pierre Boulanger, who was sent from Michelin, one day ventured out of Paris and into the countryside and found himself in a marketplace in a rural town. I suspect he hadn't been in too many marketplaces, but he saw peasants all around and he realized that they needed cars too. And in that moment of inspiration, sent back the edict that a car needed to be developed at about a sixth the cost of the Traction d'Avant. And the result of it was this radically simplified vehicle. And the particular criteria he laid out were extremely French. He wanted to be able to transport 50 kilos of potatoes over rough roads at 60 kilometers an hour. But more importantly, he had to carry a dozen French eggs across a plowed French field without breaking them. We can see in many of this very early version, some of the echoes. The single headlight, of course, reminds us of the single windshield wiper of the Nano, the three bolt wheel, and such other legendary symbols of frugal engineering. That corrugated metal of these early prototypes reminding us of such as the Ford Tri-Motor and corrugation in architecture, a very basic material. Only built in any number after the war. The prototypes went undercover in 1939, and a BMW engine served for the production model, which was completely redone by Flaminio Bertoni, the great designer, after the war. This is the post-war version with a sort of Jean Prouvaire quality to it, a classic. It's symbolic of the nature of the Duchaveau that it was the only car that Sam Beckett would ever order, and it's sort of what Beckett did for drama, you might say, the Duchaveau did for it's just, you know, as simple as a tree on a country road and two guys talking and waiting for Godot. And I think not only that, but Beckett would only have the gray one. You know, he didn't want to have a wild card, he was going to have the gray one. The Austin Morris Mini, we know this from a lot of movies, and we know the story of how it began as a basic vehicle. But let's remember, 1957, the UK, post-Suez, the empire was gone, fuel costs were through the roof, things are not doing well. The Mini was a radical rethinking, again, of the vehicle. And Britain had been quite beyond the eight ball in the automotive world. Sure, they were giving us Rolls Royces and Bentleys, top-down idea of the automobile industry, but never had achieved mass production in the American mode. So Alex Issigonis, an outsider significantly in British culture, came up with new types of engineering, turned the engine sideways, gave us front-wheel drive, basically created the prototype of the modern subcompact. And it looked pretty good, too. And by the 60s, it became, the Mary Quant posing beside the Mini. I left out the aspect of the Mini later becoming British, more the British people's car and iconic at a later period as the 60s improved and that the gray days of British culture in the 50s were left behind. Another approach to the people's car, when you have socialist people's republic, you have a car for all the people who are willing to get in line and wait 3 years for a plastic car. The East German Trabant, the ill-named Wartburg, symbols of what can go wrong with a top-down design of a car for the people's. Not very personal. A contrasting example, in 1992, Chrysler evoked the Duchaveau with this concept car aimed at China. The idea of China has a lot of people, they need a people's car. And they took the notion of recycled soda bottles in panels for this, so therefore a highly recyclable, light vehicle, easily repaired out in the rural Chinese countryside. And one of the designers was Brian Nesbitt, who later worked on the PT Cruiser. And they showed this concept of the world. We had it in our show at the Museum of Modern Art called Different Roads in 1999. The problem was the Chinese hated it. They didn't want a car for the poor people. They didn't want a car at the bottom of the market. Chairman Mao had changed China a great deal over the years. You had land reform, new economy, nuclear power, and so on. But he had not eradicated one thing from the Chinese mind, which was Buick. Buick was the car the emperor had driven, and China wanted Buicks. China would adopt the automobile from the top down. And if you don't believe branding works, I think that is a parable of the success of branding. So the China car, sort of a new Duchaveau, was a failure. Other examples, you can do people's car badly, you can do frugal engineering badly. There's a sort of Goldilocks quality. You know, you can have too little technology, too much technology, just right. The Volkswagen, for instance, over-engineered, too much technology for 1938, but just the right amount for 1958. So there's a kind of quality of those. The Peel, I think, was kind of, you know, one we... There was not enough porridge in the bowl, you might say. Wanted to move ahead. Wanted to look ahead at another example: the smart car, a people's car, thought of very consciously. by analog to a people's product. One of the things that the American system of parts did was bring a precious item, a high technology item, down into a mass market earlier, and that is to say the watch. Interchangeable parts produced the dollar watch even before the Model T, which completely changed the watch industry, and it led the way to radical personalization. And that was where Mr. Hayek stood in Switzerland. The king of the Swatch wanted to make a Swatchmobile, as it was known then, which became the smart car. At first involved with Volkswagen, then with Mercedes-Benz. The smart car is familiar from such films as, well, my favorite is the one where Woody Allen drives one into a lake, but it's also in Tom Hanks drives one outside the Louvre. So we know the smart car. But the notion here was to make a people's car that could be heavily personalized and personable and very customizable. The skins, the panels would change. He even envisioned it would be cheap enough to collect the way some people collect Swatch watches. It was a people's car designed to be personalized. So how do we get from people's cars to personal cars? There's a process as they mature, the market matures, where personalization happens, and it happens in a number of ways. One is that the cars get names, they get nicknames, Model T, Tin Lizzy, the Topolino, Mickey Mouse, and they get roles in popular culture and language. And that's part of the process that we heard a little bit about in the keynote yesterday. They also get add-on parts industry. The Model T spawned all kinds of add-ons, just as the computer world develops add-on parts and software. You get the people, the status of a car as people's car becomes a value in itself. It becomes a conspicuous low consumption item. So people buy a people's car not because it's the cheapest car they can afford, but because it is a people's car. And in consequence of that cultural change, you get retro versions. You get the new Beetle, you get the new Mini Cooper, and the new, now, Fiat 500. So the Tin Lizzy, Model T, Tin Lizzy. Not everyone remembers. Tin Lizzy was a sort of racist comparison. Lizzy was an African-American maid. It was a name like a stereotype, as Pedro would be for a Mexican. So a Tin Lizzy was, to a person in 1910, made you think of something like this, Mammy. But there was a character, a mascot quality. Already there was a kind of rueful relationship to this servant machine. There were jokes, as there were later elephant jokes, about the Ford. My Ford fell into a puddle, and all I got was a pile of tin cans, all about the tinness of it. And yet there were those who began to celebrate it. E.B. White, the famous New Yorker writer, wrote about how someone in a Model T was a man enthroned, sitting high above the road on his Model T. He wrote an essay about it that we assigned to students at the design criticism program at SVA. And this is a guy who could lend character. He was... He helped give the Model T character. He gave Stuart Little character in his books, and he created characters in Charlotte's Web. So here's language creating characters. The Fiat 500, the original one, was called Topolino. It was little like Mickey Mouse. And, of course, the Volkswagen was Herbie the Love Bug, in a sense, anticipated Professor Apaduri's entire thesis when he said, I am a car who is a people. I paraphrase, but that's what he said. And Herbie and his sequels went to South America and had many other adventures. I am a car that is a people. Customization. Early on, we had this in the Model T, but the famous flower vase in the new Beetle went back to flower vases that were added on to Volkswagens in the 50s. What is more personal than what flowers you you place there. And it's amazing. If you look around new Beetles, how many of them are actually used? I thought they would just have big pens in them when the thing came out. But there are a lot of flowers, either real or plastic, in those vases. Decoration of the vehicle is a way in which it is personalized and given personality. Of course, it has to be cheap enough to decorate. So once the price of the people's car has dropped and become accessible. And we know appearing in a Volkswagen in America after about 1962 was making a statement. Advertising had done that, but it had the Volkswagen had been placed as a people's product, as jeans were the people's clothing. And you brought with, when you made that choice socially and design-wise, you were making a statement. Retro versions come along when the cars become sufficiently iconic. This is practically a rolling logo, the new Beetle, the new Mini. We now have the new Fiat 500. Just the other day, I snapped this image of the new Fiat 500 with the 1957 version in Manhattan. We're literally blowing up, magnifying, cartooning these original designs of people's cars into highly personal, popular lifestyle products. And you can get even the Ferrari-inspired version of the new Fiat 500 order now. These cars become characters in our films and TV shows, as we know. Luigi, in the typical Disney subtlety of national stereotype, Luigi sells tires like pizza style. He's a Fiat 500. And yet we know that there the particular unconscious attraction that Mr. Tata mentioned yesterday has deep roots in the psychology of cars. Cars have faces, and German psychologists have looked at some of the facial emotions that we know are there at the most basic level, but we can see in somewhat graphic version when you try and define them on a chart. They surveyed a number of people about the aggressiveness or cuteness of particular car faces. They did grids like this. And I understand this completely, but I doubt you will. just kidding. And so they've done these, they've mapped the particular surveys for people and seen that various shapes, and these are using existing production cars, have various personalities that are transmitted. Let's compare very quickly, and I know I'm using my time here, the at least one other people's product for a similar course. There was the famous people's radio that went with the people's car, the Volks radio with the Volks car. But the most dramatic example of a people's product that had personality from the beginning is probably the Kodak Brownie, which was marketed with a personality and had itself a personality. Like the Model T, it was a universal black box for everyone, low price. It had a definite social principle behind it. It believed that photography for everyone was a good thing, the way the Model T believed that automobility was a good thing for everybody. And it was hugely, hugely successful. It was easy to use, universal, and yet it then became customized and personal with the addition of color. Color is the great primary metaphor for the addition of personality to the basic black product. A Model T was any color you want, as long as it is black. And General Motors' response with an array of personalized cars, cars for every person purpose, as the famous phrase had it, was the addition of paint in 1925. So paint is the way you begin to have personality. A car in any color you want is the response, and the people's car then takes on personality. The people's product takes on personality with color and design. We see it in our own more recent example, of course, with the iPod. And we see it already in looking at the yellow that seems to be the apt color for the Tata Nano. You know, car designers talk about signature colors for their cars, the car which most brings out the essence of that car. Ferraris are red. A Mini might be best seen in British racing green. But I think this this yellow suggests the personality inherent in the Nano. It's still emerging. The story is not written, but it reminds me of certain characters out there. It did from the first time I saw it. Our cars are cartoons, too. And these images are rich with personality and personableness. And I don't know if this is the future fate, but I have no doubt that already the Tata Nano is both a people's car and a personable car already. Thank you.
I'd like to welcome Linda Nozick, who is a professor of environmental engineering here at Cornell. Linda is the director of the systems program in the College of Engineering. And she received her PhD from University of Pennsylvania. She's a fellow at Atkinson Center for Sustainable Futures at Cornell. She received numerous awards, which, like I said, if we start listing those, we'll be here for a long time. But she definitely is a very distinguished scholar here. And also, the reason why we, kind of have a particular relationship with Linda is that Linda was an advisor to the Nano exhibit, Nano Project, early on. So she's one of these kind of core people that helped bring this whole thing along. So with that in mind, I'd like to welcome Linda here. And you do drive a car too, right?
I do.
Okay, well, so that there's a controversy right there. So welcome Linda Nozick.
So we've talked quite a bit about the Nano. We'll continue to talk about the Nano. It has tremendous benefits in terms of quality of life, economic mobility for people, safety. I'm not going to focus on those issues. I'm really going to focus on energy consumption, carbon emissions, and then I'm going to end with a few observations. So this is a figure that illustrates energy consumption from 1800 to 2008. This is a little bit of a concern. We're using energy at an incredible rate, okay? In all forms of energy, pretty much. But crude, all sorts of carbon-based fossil fuels. Our population's growing around the world in some pretty significant ways. Okay, so the chart has some very important information in it for us as a population, as an entire world. This is very much a discussion on a global scale, not really about individual countries. Economic activity and energy use. We have to realize that economic activity is tied to energy use. It's one of the mechanisms by which we create economic opportunity is, in fact, by consuming energy. Okay, and so you can look at this chart along the x-axis. This is from the World Bank, is energy use per capita, and along the y-axis, it's GDP per capita. Okay, and there are a couple of outliers here, but pretty much, energy use and economic development are correlated, okay, and we have to recognize that. I think from our perspective that one of the things that tells us is we can't be just saying to countries, you can't use energy, you need to cut down on it. We need to be thinking about what this means for their future and what it means for the entire world, and thinking about how we use existing supplies of energy and perhaps transitioning to alternative supplies. For energy and transportation, about 30% of energy use is actually associated with transportation. The vast majority of that is in liquid fuel form. Okay, so 53% of liquid fuel consumption comes from transportation, and that's on the rise. So by 2035, that's expected to rise to about 61%. Energy use and emissions are driven by vehicle ownership. Okay, so this is an issue for the global on a global scale. We'll look at U.S. fuel economy. We should put our numbers up first. So there's been efforts in the U.S. to look at and CAFE standards and trying to increase the auto efficiency of our vehicles. We've had ebbs of success at that and lack of success at that. Okay, so you can see in the U.S., 2010, we're only talking about being about 23 miles per gallon, okay, on average between our trucks and our cars. European fuel efficiency is twice ours. The Europeans are doing better than the Americans. There's no doubt about that in terms of fuel efficiency. The Nano is better than that. It's 54 miles per gallon. It's more than double the U.S. efficiency of the United States. And it's about half the fuel efficiency of the scooters it will replace. So just to get it in context here. But no doubt it's more efficient than what we're driving. Relationship between energy use and carbon emissions. So carbon emissions and energy use are directly related together, no doubt about that. So we look at CO2 2008 emissions. China now tops the United States. The United States, though, is second and doing quite well at polluting that way. Russia, India, Japan, and Germany. But if you look at the growth rates in the United States is forecasted to be about 0.2 on average between 1990 and 2035. In Mexico, 1.8. In China, 2.7. Okay. In India, 1.8. So the growth rates are quite high in some parts of the world. This is on an increasing slope. Okay. Given that the Nano is going to have more than twice the energy efficiency of the U.S. fleet, we can expect about half the carbon emissions, though, coming from that car. But if we think about moving automobiles to many more countries of the world, this is many more cars. Okay, many, many more cars. In the interest of, okay, so how many nanos are there going to be? I think this is an important question. We talk about people's cars. We talk about bringing cars to very, very large populations of people. Okay, what does that mean for how many there will be? Because it's number times emissions. Bring down emissions, but large number, this still is going to be a very big number in the end. Okay, so this is actually an analysis done by some economists at NYU. They took data from countries around the world, and they estimated the number of vehicles per 1,000 people using data from 1960 to 2002. So this is a statistical analysis. You can look at and see the United States up over here, 1960 to 2002, along the x-axis is per capita income. That's in purchasing power parity. And along the y-axis, it's vehicles per 1,000 people. And you can see the trajectory. You can see for Japan, for Germany, South Korea. Then you can look down here, that's a little different scale, to see some of the emerging economies and that have already really emerged, China, India, South Korea, okay? This is an estimation based on time series data where the authors looked at things like the density of the countries, the percent urbanization, and looked at that versus income and how many vehicles were purchased per 1,000 people. Okay, this is assuming a certain technology efficient frontier for production. As you do things like build a nano, which brings the cost of production down and really shifts the production curve quite a lot in terms of cost, you'll get a discrete jump off of some of these numbers. This isn't based on some of the technology and the engineering that is involved in some of the less expensive cars that could now be coming out. Okay, so these could be underestimates. So how many nanos will there be? So the thirst for cars around the world really doesn't hold, there's no country boundaries to that. I think that's one of the morals of this sort of a story. This is now looking at saturation rate. So this is per capita income in thousands. This is vehicles per 1,000 people. This is the United States. This is France, Netherlands, Indonesia, China, and India. Yes, there's some differences, but they're not that big. There's a common interest around the world, if you have the money, to have a car. This is part of the human condition, probably. Okay, and I think that part of this is not saying to parts of the world you can't have a car. It's recognizing that there is this. As countries become more economically advanced, they have more opportunities to purchase items. Cars are one of those items, and we need to think about that very seriously. Okay, so that sort of brings me to some conclusions, get us back a little bit more on time. These energy and environmental issues, they exist at the global scale. They're not confined to certain countries of the world. They really are global. To address them, we need to think about this on a global scale. There is a tremendous amount of tension between these issues and economic development. It's very difficult to turn to some part of the world and say, you can't do what we did. Okay, we can't really be thinking that way. This is now all of us together figuring out how we're going to address all of these issues. And that's my point with Nano underscores a range of equity issues. Poor people deserve cars too. It's not just about the wealthy and the not wealthy. Okay, so this is really all of us in this together and saying that, gee, here as this shift occurs in how much it costs to make a car, we now need to think more carefully and maybe move more quickly to more sustainable energy practices and technologies as we realize that we can really build these cars at a lower price point. okay, that this really brings us to the need for alternative vehicles even more than we already were at that spot.
The plenary yesterday also kind of brought up this issue of sort of things, wanting things, right? So questions of aspiration. So it sounds like that there are sort of several conflicting aspirations at the table. So on one hand, there is an aspiration of a country to have a vehicle, right, that they can sort of make and afford, and that's, you know, great. On the other hand, there is also this kind of aspiration to, on the part of the kind of consumer, on the part of the people, on the part of the people who sell these things, to make them part of this kind of a popular culture, right, which is also, you know, like what you've demonstrated. And then there seems to be also, on the part of the developing world at least, that there is an aspiration to kind of like look back at, in a way, what they've done to sort of to our environment and say, wait a minute, what is happening? So we're clearly in the conflict of aspirations here. So I'm wondering if all of the panelists, one way or the other, could sort of reflect on that situation and perhaps suggest, well, I mean, it's a little bit too tall order to ask, suggest a way out, but at least something that where we can go. Because we're clearly, like I said, there's definitely conflict of wants and needs. And what should we do?
Well, it's a good thing we have efficient presenters who catch us up. But I think that is the big question. And the very personalization of the automobile gives it such a comparatively unfair advantage over what we think of as impersonal carriers. Whether it is the alternative bus trend or rail or whatever. I mean, I think that the challenge may be to personalize some of those. One of the things that's very interesting that's beginning to happen in this country, surprisingly, is the return of bus travel. And partly, some of the same techniques of branding that made the automobile such a success are being applied to buses. Now, buses were a sort of pathetic joke in this country for many years. Bus stations were the most undesirable ambient. And yet, at one point, they were designed by Raymond Loewy. The graphics were fantastic. You know, they were cutting edge. And they were an efficient way. In fact, I remember seeing the opening of the Pennsylvania Turnpike. It wasn't just about the private car. It was about taking the Greyhound. So perhaps some of the personalization of the more efficient carriers is one of the answers. I want to say one other thing, though, about the great virtue of the automobile is it's not only the personality, but the personal choice about it. When the automobile was new, it was the ability to choose when you would go and where you would go is an unprecedented advantage. The train, you still have to go on schedule. It only goes certain places. That personal choice factor of the automobile remains not only a psychological advantage, but a practical one that has to be answered by mass carriers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with Shafil, but I think there is one more point, as mentioned by Linda. We should also try to find more. Energy efficient vehicle, for example, going for electric vehicles or going for the hybrid vehicles, where we will able to save the energy and environmental point of view, also it will definitely help a lot. So in one way, we can try to increase the population of the car, but the other way, we can restrict to having more and more electric vehicles, which will have a more better energy efficiency as well as the environment friendliness. I think that will also help.
Yeah, I agree actually with both of you, but I think we do need to move towards looking at alternative sources of fuel. So that we're burning something different than coal and power plants, and we've got a more sustainable plan for what goes in, and then I think electric vehicles are a good option.
How electrifiable is the Nano design, by the way? Could it be easily converted to an electric version? Surely that must be a scenario you all looked at, if I may ask.
Yeah, certainly. In fact, in the last Geneva Motor Show, we had kept a Nano with electric vehicle. It was demonstrated, and as a concept, some amount of work has been started. However, the more push for electric vehicles should happen through the government. If we have more subsidies and then more availability of the station where we can charge the batteries, then it will be, it makes a lot of sense to go for electric vehicle, certainly.
I think that's the same position that a lot of companies are in, because there's a lot of externalities associated with driving. When you go out on the road and you drive a car and you use fuel and you put carbon in the air and particulate matter, you're creating a lot of externalities that the market doesn't really know how to address. And so that's where government comes in.
Yep.
Well, let's hope the government will kick in at some point, one way or the other. But it's sort of a little bit like waiting for Godot, waiting for them to sort of do something, to rip on your Beckett moment. So I suppose we should open the table to the questions from the audience, if there are any. And it looks like there are a whole bunch. So
I have some questions for Mr. Deshpande.
Yeah. Okay, the answer to the first question, the average salary of an Indian is about 15,000 rupees a month. I think we have to convert. It's approximation, I will say. I do not know the exact figure, of course, but it will be around, say, $600 per month. And the iPad, whatever you have seen, that is basically in terms of the connectivity for the navigation, connectivity for internet, and the connectivity of a few of the vehicle functions, but not all the functions, but certainly some of the vehicle functions can be connected to it, like the opening of the door, or you can start the air conditioning, for example, before you enter the car, maybe before 5 minutes before going into the car, you can start. So it's some of the functions can be certainly put into the iPad.
A front drive was inherently more efficient by distribution of, I mean, that front wheel drive became sort of the consensus engineering choice circa 57. You mean versus rear engine placement?
Yeah.
Rear engine placement leads to less stable driving factors, and you have, well, I mean, these are issues about suspension and so on that maybe we don't want to get into, but people remember Corvair's becoming dangerous.
They had the same suspension as the Volkswagen.
Well, the Volkswagen, cute as it was no performance vehicle and was a fairly dangerous vehicle. Even Ralph Nader, Nader outlined that as well. I mean, I just think there's sort of their kind of states of the art consensus wise on engineering, and front wheel drive continues to be thought of as the more efficient packaging. Although we're going to see a lot of that happening, and you probably can say more about this, with electronics and the possibilities of hybrids with flexible all-wheel drive where you have motors at the wheels. The electronic aspects are not just in that fantastic parking example, but electronics making efficient all parts of the system, smart traction control, and we haven't even talked about the aspect of electronics responding to other vehicles in the environment, knowing who's coming and that's what.
Talk about efficiency. Then how come all the Formula One and the DTMs and everything, they're all rear drives?
Go fast and be well driven is a different parameter than efficiency.
Okay. I had a question for. I had a question for Linda and Mr. Deshpande. Do you guys think the idea of a sustainable world and having cars for everyone are two goals that can be reached simultaneously? Or how do you think the two play into each other? And at what point in the future can we actually reach a culmination where the two are possible simultaneously?
The part I think that's going to be the challenge first is land use. So if some of these much more populated countries want to have cars at the same rate where they have tremendous density in the cities, this is going to be a challenge. It's very difficult to get out of the idea of cars. And it's a whole different way to think about life and your movement within society. And it's hard for me to say that I can imagine a world where we figured out how to do that and not need cars. So so one thought is, well, can we make them in a way that they're less toxic to the environment and to energy use? It doesn't mean we don't provide very good alternative forms of transportation and try to incentivize them out by having good alternatives. But the point where they're zero and we're all into more mass transit structures, that I don't quite see it. It doesn't mean it's not possible. It's just my imagination isn't good enough.
Well, actually, if anything, I wanted to elaborate on that a little bit. I mean, one large reason I would say that the cars are kind of popular the way they're, especially in the States, right, is that there's a certain association with this thing. Is that it's like kind of like your horse, right? It's like you're the freedom, the frontier up there. You go and it's an easy thing to aspire. And I think part of what contributes to that is the very idea that they're sort of personable and kind of cute or project some sort of image. With that kind of logic, one would say the design is at fault. And if we're all driving boxes that are sort of the same and numerous and identical, would be better off, at least environmentally. But that's just
that sort of goes against our the way our economy works, the way our culture works, the way sort of the West has operated with a market-based system, right? If people can build something and other people want to buy it, we generally say that's it's kind of the way we constructed our system.
Right.
And even Europe, Europe's gone to little slower numbers of vehicles per people, but they've done that part of it through regulation of how much it costs to pay for gas, right? And so they got much smaller cars, but they're still buying cars, right? And they're smaller, the streets are smaller, so they've packaged something more reasonable to their environment versus the West and the US. But there's still this tremendous drive towards vehicles, even in places where cities weren't designed to have them. they're driving down the roads.
Well, there is, I think the factor you put your finger on when you said, you can't do what we did. That's the big sticky boy. I mean, but they can do it better.
That's
I mean,
it, and we have to do it better. So it's both sides. We can't do what we did before either.
we've
learned a lot more.
We don't have a sort of granulated system. We should have a system that grades up from the personal car, the taxi, the jitney. We don't have a lot of the in-between thing. We may need bullet trains, we may not, but we don't have the menu of choices either that other countries do. And just to say one thing about the selling of the cars, if cars are avatars in some view, that now we have avatars on the screen. We maybe don't need the cars as much. And I when I talk to old grizzled automotive guys, they always say, "Oh, these kids, they don't appreciate cars like we do." Well, no, they don't. They don't care as much. That's probably a good thing. It's all into their mobile electronics. And mobile electronics are much more for the average 18-year-old what fixing up a 32 Ford was 50 years ago. So that, some of these social meanings that, again, we heard about, referred to in the keynote yesterday, some of these social meanings necessarily move from one technology to another. I mean, they move from carriages in Jane Austen's day or Dickens' day to automobiles and maybe to their my really cool iPhone.
Right, and it looks like Pixel is aspiring
really cool,
to merge these things together. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That's right, well, they will. Yeah.
Could be great, but also be. So there was a question, and we should probably take one more and after that wrap up.
I think the idea of trying to give everybody an automobile at a cheap price point is incredible. I'm more towards Linda, the environmental impacts of putting what opens up to another quarter of a billion people an automobile, like putting a fossil fuel generated car or a fossil fuel powered car on the market to another 250 million people. Is that a good idea? Is that something, is there a way to modify it to have another method of fuel? Or diesel or vegetable power, anything like that. I just, when I first heard about the car, I just
especially starting construction now or it being a modern car, I would have just imagined it to have been electric. And I understand the limitations that the government of not having power stations and how are people going to engage with that, but is that not part of the manufacturer's responsibility of trying to do this and like working with the government? It's a very, very big issue for me personally of like how you guys plan on dealing with this.
We look at the responsible manufacturer.
I agree with you. I think it should be a joint collaboration between the manufacturer and the government should come up to have these facilities of the power station, etc., for the specifically for electric vehicles to come up. And there had been certain countries have gone ahead, like Norway has a lot of electric cars, and there is a lot of collaboration between the manufacturer and as well as also the government. I think your question is right. It's more the two people coming together rather than only government doing it. Yeah, I agree with you.
So, I mean, is there anything proactive that is happening currently now? Because, I mean, it just seems like this will open it up to such a large number of people, and it will now, you know, I can see this thing really flying off the shelves in a lot of ways. And what you know, is there anything in place now to start working on that, I guess? And if not, you know, is there perhaps a plan to start at some point? Maybe, I don't know if you have the answer to that or not, but that's...
Well, you do have the electric prototype sitting there waiting for its time.
And I think whatever the projection has been made recently, then that in 2030, the 30% car population which will be sold will be electric vehicle. So that is actually a huge number, and I think the whole automotive industry is going for it. And recently in Geneva Motor Show, we found that each and every manufacturer has an electric vehicle now. You take Hyundai, you take General Motors, you take Chrysler, everybody has developed an electric vehicle, and the technology is more and more improving, and I think in future we'll find more and more electric vehicle cars on the road. Certainly.
So last part, just from the man, is there anything that we as the consumer can do to help this? Like, is there any, from your point of view, telling us to demand something in particular that can help facilitate this? You know, I'm just very kind of trying to be as proactive about this as possible in the sense of like, what can we do to help create demand?
Bicycle.
How does, but you know, that doesn't help.
See, actually, to make more and more electric vehicle, there are three parts that is more important. One is the cost of the electric vehicle are very high. The second is the infrastructure in terms of charging is not so much available, and the third is the range. I mean, how much the car will go is still quite restricted. I mean, if you buy an electric vehicle, maybe the range is, say, 75 miles, 80 miles, or maybe maximum 100 miles, and which is not convenient for many of the customers to take a car with such a low range. But certainly, I believe that there has been a lot of technology improvements are happening today in terms of the batteries. And I believe that more and more cars will be available with the bigger range. And certainly, as a consumer, people should buy the electric vehicle rather than the petrol or diesel vehicles.
All right. Well, so thank you. On that note, I think we should make room for panel number two, which will be talking. Well, I think we'll actually further the discussion. So, and if anybody in the audience has more questions, I'm sure you can probably catch my panelists off guard in the in the corridor. But thank you again for coming.
Thank you.